Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Comes out today called The Kids Are All Right. And for A.O. Scott, at least, he's a film critic for the New York Times, it inspired him to ask the question, is that really true? Are kids actually all right? He wrote an article, right, A.O., called They Grow Up So Quickly, Don't They? And you looked at the new releases over the summer and what they may tell us about our kids and the state of the family today.
Well, I was very interested because there were two movies that very, very different kinds of movies that came out within a few weeks of each other that dealt with the parents' experience of a kid going off to college, which is not something that's dealt with centrally in movies a lot. One of them is The Kids Are All Right, and the other was Toy Story 3, where Andy grows up and finally goes to college. And it got me, these and a few other movies got me thinking about relationships between parents and teenagers, partly because I have a teenager and an almost teenager of my own, so I'm thinking about this.
Yourself.
close to home.
Have you seen Juno yet, Tony? Have you seen Juno yet? Yeah. Nothing. Yes. Never mind.
Stop that. A.O. Scott.
I've watched it many times.
A.O. Scott is joining us from Chicago because he is right now filming the final episodes for the long-running show At the Movies, of which he's been the co-host for the past year. Also with us, Takeaway contributor Rafer Guzman, who's also the film critic for Newsday. Good morning to both of you, first of all.
Morning.
Let me first just ask you real quickly, briefly, if this movie is good. Thumbs up, Tony, on this movie, The Kids Are All Right?
It's wonderful. It's one of the best movies about an American family that I've seen in a very long time. It
wow.
has extraordinary performances. Just to give a little kind of thumbnail of it, Annette Bening and Julianne Moore play a couple who have been together for a long time, and they have these two teenage kids, an 18-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old son. And the son is really curious about who his father might be, that is, who the sperm donor is. And it turns out he and his sister track down the sperm donor who is technically both of their fathers. And he's played by Mark Ruffalo. And he shows up and he kind of turns into this wild card, sort of throws a monkey wrench into the whole family, gets close and in some cases too close to members of it. And it's just every character in this movie is so vivid and unpredictable and real. It's very, very funny without being at all mean-spirited, and it's just a fantastic movie. The director, Lisa Cholodenko, has made a couple of very good movies before, one of them called Laurel Canyon with Frances McDormand. This is really, I think, I have to say, one of the best movies of the year so far. So, yes, good movie.
Well, let's hear just a clip of it real quick.
Are you having a relationship with someone?
You can tell us, honey. We would understand and support you.
Look, I only met him once.
What do you mean, once?
Did he find you online?
Wait.
What?
Wait, who did you meet once?
Paul.
Paul? Who's Paul?
Our sperm donor.
So, really... Mark Ruffalo, not actually the father of Annette Bening and Julianne Moore. He's their baby daddy.
Yes, he's their anonymous sperm donor.
Right.
Who, you know, back when he was a college student, wanted to make a little extra money and thought it would be a fun way to do it, to give something of himself. And you know, that has come back 2 decades later in the form of these two teenagers.
And it turns out that you feel like this movie shows the kids have less neuroses than the parents. But Rafer, let's talk about the second movie that Tony refers to in his article. This is Toy Story 3.
What are you going to do with these toys? Should we donate them to Sunnyside?
Mom, no one's going to want those old toys.
Fine. You have till Friday. Anything that's not packed for college or in the attic is getting thrown out.
Whatever you say, Mom.
Okay, without disparaging your manhood, Rafer, you did say in your Movie Date podcast that this movie made you weep until the front of your shirt was soaked.
You guys really know how to throw these quotes back at me, don't you? I think part of it is that But now that I'm a parent, I think just all my defenses are down. I just feel like these movies just get to me. And also Pixar is so good at that. And Toy Story, I think one of the things about Toy Story is that there's never been a father in these movies. It's never really explained, as far as I know. I don't think they make any attempt to really explain what happened to this guy. But his his absence is somehow felt, and his absence is somehow there to me through all those movies. And maybe me being as a father, I kind of feel that too.
Well,
you know?
Tony, the old Disney construct was kill the mother in the beginning. That's what they did in Bambi. Right. Pixar seems to be there's no father.
Right.
In this case, yeah. I mean, there is, you know, obviously in Finding Nemo, they kill the mother there. So that tradition is still thriving. But it is because, you know, Andy has grown up in, a single parent home with his sister and his mother and his toys. And like the kids in The Kids Are Right, he's come out okay. I mean, what you see of Andy, you see more of Andy, I think, in this movie than in the previous two. And you see what a good guy he's grown up to be. What a sweet and generous and loving and kind and still very imaginative person. And it's partly because of his toys. The substitute, in a way, for his father has maybe been Woody in an odd way. That is that playing with these toys and projecting his imagination onto them has helped him grow up into the person that he is, even in the absence of a father. So one thing that you get from both these movies is that an unconventional nuclear family arrangement can still yield okay results. The kids can end up okay.
Okay, Tony, I take great comfort in that picture of the American family and the American teenager, but your next one on your list really frightens me. You say Twilight talks about the modern teenager.
You wouldn't have to change for me, Bella. I'm in love with you, and I want you to pick me instead of him.
Please tell me it's an unrealistic picture of the American teenager.
You didn't grow up around any vampires?
I did not, that I know of.
Well, yeah, it's wildly unrealistic in every way. But one thing I think that's very interesting about Twilight, again, we have Bella Swan, who lives with her dad, whose parents are divorced. The mom is in this one a little more than she was certainly in the last one. But in a way, what Bella is presented with, not just this fascinating romantic predicament, is she going to choose Jacob or Edward, but these two alternative models of family life, the vampires and the werewolves, neither of which is conventionally modern nuclear family. The werewolves are a tribe, and the vampires define themselves as a clan. They're not blood relations in the technical traditional human sense, and they offer a sort of a both of these offer, I think, a more supportive emotional setting for the people who monsters who live in them than Bella's splintered human family does.
All right, so I'm going to ask both of you. Tony, you come away from these summer movies with a good feeling about kids and families?
Well, they're just movies, so, but yes.
And Rafer?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. I mean, I go very up and down. Mostly it's the teenagers that I worry about, especially when I see them devouring Twilight.
I'm trying to figure out if I was raised by vampires or werewolves.
Definitely werewolves for me. Let's go to trivial, though, for both of you, Tony Scott and Rafer Guzman. When it comes to unconventional families, we got a recent movie that featured two gay men and the nephew who caused trouble by being too gay. However, it didn't stop them from not wanting to send him back to South America when they were supposed to. Can any of you name this movie?
I cannot.
Oh, my gosh.
I remember.
I may have been the only person that saw it.
You must have been. It was a very
directed
small
by Laurie
indie
Lind.
Film. Yes, yes. I remember the plot. I remember little things about it. I did not see it.
It was a great movie, Breakfast with Scott.
Oh. Breakfast with Scott. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
A.O.
Scott is the film critic for the New York Times, co-host of At the Movies, and Rafer Guzman, takeaway movie contributor, film critic for Newsday.
I was thinking Being Too Gay would be a good movie title all by itself. Stumped me, that's for sure. Well, we love it when you get in touch with us, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or post a comment to thetakeaway.org. Have a great weekend, folks. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.